not strong enough to do the event. He even had me doing handstand press-ups. And I've got to tell you, if you're going to the South Pole, doing it, being able to do a press-up in a handstand position is of no use whatsoever. But I think he was trying to toughen me up a bit. And we did. We started to grow into the role. We started to get fit enough and strong enough and knowledgeable enough to travel to Norway. I teamed up with our Norwegian teammate, I think, the Solheim. We did survival training with ex-British special forces in Austria. What do you do to get out of a crevasse if you fall down? What do you do if your teammates fall down? What do you do if you have a heart attack? A heart attack bit came just at the end of training. If you have a heart attack in Antarctica, you're probably dead. It's a very small piece of the training. And we were ready. We were ready to go. We left Dublin via London to Cape Town, packed our sledges, checked the gear, and passed under the departure board marked Antarctica. We boarded a Russian cargo plane and flew off with the other teams to a Russian science base called Novo on the edge of Antarctica to start the warm-up. And Tony gave us the safety briefing, and he told us and reminded us that we had 2 weeks, 8, 10, 12 hours a day, moving up through the mountains up onto the polar plateau, the acclimatization and the test. If we didn't pass the test, we couldn't do it. If we didn't look like we would be successful at getting to the pole, we wouldn't even be allowed to race. Bear in mind, I've been training for a year. I told hundreds of people, perhaps thousands of people, that I was going to do the event. My motivational speeches to companies were entitled Making It Happen. I had a book called Making It Happen. I was in Antarctica, 100,000 down, spent other people's money, and there was a distinct possibility that I might not make it happen. I would have a credibility problem at that point. And we were there 2 weeks later through whiteout blizzards, 24-hour daylight in Antarctica. Tony popped his head into the tent, told us, "You're in," and he was gone again. 800 kilometers, weeks and weeks of racing to go directly south. We lined up side by side, all those other teams, the real adventurers, and it was me, my mate Simon, who plays rugby, and our secret weapon in Solheim from Norway. We counted down in the middle of nowhere, out loud, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. We went up the start line like it was a 100-meter sprint, trying to get our closest in front, although day one was going to be 14 hours of racing. The last 2 hours, Simon literally started to fall asleep on his skis. He'd never raced at that intensity or for that length before. By day two, they're going to concentrate on Simon. By day two, Simon had developed a frostbite on his left ear. That night in the tent, his ear was filling with fluid. Frostbite on his ear. By day three and four, as he tried to keep his ear warm, he was venting his face, trying to keep cool. He got frostbite on his cheeks and on his nose and on his lips. His lips were cracking up so badly that in the tent at night, the slurping and noises coming from Simon were almost unbearable. He had frostbite all over his face. By day 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, he had developed what they call polar cough, a dry hacking cough. He was on antibiotics. As we moved through the middle week of the race phase, we were skiing for 2 hours, breaking for 5 minutes to take water and food on board, 2 hours on, 5 minutes off, going for 14, 16 hours a day. Simon was coughing so hard that he was spitting blood into the white snow and ice of Antarctica, not drinking and fueling his body. By the time we have 10 days to go, Simon had probably lost 3 stone of the body weight. He was not the hulk of a man who was training back here in Dublin. He looked to me like he was on the edge. With 10 days to go, he got frostbite on 3 fingers on his left hand. With a week to go, he got frostbite on his right thumb. And we moved through in third place, racing hard, beating some of those adventurers that we were scared of at the start of the race. Scared that they'd beat us. With 3 days to go, the temperature dropped from a warm minus 40, and it snapped down in the whiteout down to minus 60. I think that's minus 60 centigrade and about minus 70 Fahrenheit. Simon's fingers started a wee freeze. Aminga made the call that the race was potentially over. Our tent went up after the first 2 hours of that day, and Simon was presented with the decision whether he was going to get on the satellite phone and evacuate, or whether he was going to adapt, change, go on and make it happen. We sat in the tent for 5 hours. And I've got a video to show you what the result was. We'll play this out full video. My main goal with this race, I've done quite a lot of adventure races, but I've always felt the reason why people pat me on the back is because I've done these things when I'm blind. I think this race is, regardless of the blindness, this race is challenging on its own, and I wanted to come and do something that was really inspiring regardless of the blindness.